Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today's guest is a really special treat because we heard from him recently. It's Joshua Abramson, the I Love You Man. Can we just say that as your introduction?
Absolutely. Okay. I love you, Janet.
I love you, Joshua. And this is, the concept here was Joshua's desire to change the universal greeting. Is that too broad?
No, that all 7 billion of us start every conversation with I love you and go from there.
Instead of hello.
Instead of hello or how are you or namaste or whatever it is, just I love you, how are you?
The accepted greeting. Okay, yes. So we talked about a lot, and at the end of it, afterwards, I had said to Joshua, what about strangers? I mean, strangers you don't think would answer back. For example, you know, they're just groups of people who are busy with their own thoughts. And, you know, you go through certain neighborhoods and there are people who are, you know, addicted and substance abuse sufferers and they're lying on the ground and they're not. I said to him, you wouldn't bother them with I love you, would you? And you said.
I say, absolutely. In fact, in the 6 years of sharing I love you as an agreement and going from there, I found that the one group of people who were the most universally accepting were homeless people. And so much so that they had no conditions at all. You just say, I love you, and they just kind of look at you, break into a wide grin, and laugh and say, yeah, of course you do. I love you,
too.
I
thought that was so interesting. And so I wanted you to come back and talk about the places we would not think of. I mean, we think of it more in terms of social place. Well, we think of it. I never thought of it at all before I met you. But now that I have, my perception was more in social groups where you're actually introduced to people. But no, because you said there's a pragmatic aspect to it in business. And
absolutely.
You talk.
So the greeting is, to me, it's a rallying cry.
Which means what?
Which means that instead of being warm and fuzzy, touchy-feely, that it's something that our survival really hangs in the balance. That we live in an age of a lot of separation and enmity, black, white, good, bad, you know, you versus me. And that I think that we have sort of a narcissistic disorder on a global level where we're a little bit too self-interested and a little bit too much into our personal experience and not as much in recognition of the other. So much so that it's...
That means walking down the street just absorbed in your own thoughts about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
And just not aware of other people?
Going, this is it over here. This skin suit is what defines...
Well, see, we need a television moment. Josh is pointing to himself at his heart area.
And saying, this skin suit, this body, this constitutes all of me and this is reality. When in fact, using I love you as a universal greeting, what I described the last time was that what melts away is the illusion that we're separate. And we get that we are actually all just each other, that we are all one, and that we are unity. So if we don't get that, if we don't get responsibility for each other, and that we are all one, we're aligned on the same mission, then I think we're hastening our extinction as the predominant species on this planet. On any number of levels, be it war or famine or the environment, business, you name it.
That separation that you're talking about is really kind of what leads people to believe that they should be at war or can be at war. I mean, you wouldn't make that kind of war against your own family.
No, but we do.
In fact, our family, as I'm saying it, I realize that. Never mind.
The richest vein where we feel so injured and so we're so right and we have been so wronged. That what it does is it just sucks us into this downward spiral of lower emotions, hatred, fear, enmity.
Okay.
And what gets me unhooked is the most incredible tool that I've used and that I also use with businesses as well is something called the Ho'onopono prayer. So this is a Hawaiian ritual that's also known all throughout the South Seas, from Polynesia to Tahiti to New Zealand. They all have different versions of it. And quite simply, it is, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you.
And that's all in one sentence. That's how you start right. off a relationship.
And, well, yeah. no, that would be if you're hooked. Mm-hmm. So if you have this emotional hook that says, I am so right and they are so wrong and I have been so wrong.
No, but what I'm asking, I understand mm-hmm. that point, but you say those things all in a running sentence.
Yes.
That's what this greeting is.
And uh-huh. you can say, well, it's not even a greeting. It's something that you can say to yourself as soon as you feel hooked.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know how, I haven't been in a Ho'oponopono ceremony, or it's used as therapy because their thought is that illness comes from this enmity. And the separation and the wrongs that we have done, mm-hmm. that's what causes our physical illness. So what they do is they bring an elder or a family elder or a religious person in the community to be able to hold the space for families or groups to be able to work out their issues.
Ah.
And they start with the Ho'oponopono prayer.
So you mean that literally as therapy?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes. This is also new to me that we have to differentiate what's figurative and what's literal because I could confuse those here.
Right.
And
so,
before you talk about business, though, mm-hmm. I don't think I asked you last time because I so accepted this philosophy as natural as soon as you started to talk about it. That what brought this? How did you come to this? What made you decide that this would be something good for?
It came and got me. So I was...
In just that form. Oh, when you were doing your thinking in the shower.
When I was doing my thinking in the shower.
I see.
And it came
okay.
and got
in
me.
In that form, though, pretty much.
When the voice, which has spoken right. to me about four times in life...
You said that. Maybe I just forgot that you said that. Yes,
so
I remember
now. So I was looking for some kind of avenue, some kind of platform where I could make a big difference in raising consciousness on a global level. And the voice said, how about everybody starts every conversation with I love you and
you
goes
did say
from
that.
There.
Okay.
And so I was
I'm
incredulous.
I'm glad you're saying it again.
I was incredulous and my inner New Yorker came out and said,
yes.
Are you freaking kidding me? Me? Maybe it's like, forget you. Or, but then the voice just said, how about you try? And so I tried and I was doing a community project and that's when I created all of the I Love You Made Easy play shops. And the I Love
okay.
You awareness
okay.
events, et cetera.
So take it to business now, because that's...
Right. So earlier this
that's
year...
That's even weirder.
Well, it's even weirder. We started to touch on it, but not into the broader applications, where
okay.
in my day-to-day business, being in e-commerce and in precious metals, that we just sell a hunk of gold, a hunk of silver. It's totally a commodity. Where do you buy your gasoline? It's usually based on price. And that standing in I love you as our core value for business became a great differentiator. And our customers just felt cared for. They felt gotten and heard, especially when there were problems. And we treated people in a way that other companies, our competitors, didn't. And as a result, we got customers for life. So I've worked with other companies around I love you as the core value for business and heart-based ethical capitalist,
that
conscious
means
capitalism.
You teach them how to do this?
Absolutely.
You present this? Okay, so how does that go?
Well, one of...
And who can we expect that I love you from?
Well, I look at companies like eBay, who has been my main platform as a seller, as a customer for the last 10 years. But I've gotten to do a lot of work with them in terms of my best practices as a seller, but also their corporate culture. And in being able to spread I love you. And I had the humbling experience of speaking to the entire assembled leadership of the company last December at Leaders Day. And I just said, I'm the Johnny Appleseed of I love you. I have this movement where I start every conversation with I love you. And that's what I see for all 7 billion of us. And the theme of that seller panel, the four of us and the moderator, became about I love you and our businesses and why it's so important. In March of this year, I went to the Wisdom 2.0 Summit, which is a beautiful 3 days of conversation around mindfulness and business, conscious capitalism, and all of the biggest presences in Silicon Valley. They come and you get thought leaders in mindfulness practice and all these thought leaders in business come together, and it's a delightful conversation. And Jeff Weiner, the CEO of LinkedIn, was speaking on a panel, and somebody asked him the question, how do you generate compassion when you have to fire somebody?
Ooh.
And I'm sitting there just about jumping out of my seat, one of 2,000 sitting in that hall going, ooh, I got that one. And for me, it's the Ho'oponopono prayer.
Ah.
Where, and I wrote a post about it on LinkedIn called, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, you're fired. And that might seem callous, but what Jeff Weiner was saying is that I really try to generate compassion for the person sitting across the table from me and put myself in their shoes. And I don't know any better can opener or way to be able to generate that than by taking responsibility for all of it, by saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. And then you are completely responsible.
That really fits into what you would want to say for you're fired.
Yes.
It sounds better in Hawaiian, for sure. It sounds softer. But yes,
yes,
those four things.
Where I see you, uh-huh, and I recognize you, and you are me, and your suffering is mine, and my suffering is yours, and we have a parting of ways. So it just creates that beautiful recognition and that connection between two people so that they're speaking heart to heart in difficult moments. And that simple tool can be applied to really any difficult situation in life, whether it be in the business world or all of it, really, where you just take responsibility for all of it and you get that you are them and they are you. It's delightful.
And have people gotten back to you about how these things, how this has gone, if they've tried it? Or you propose and you're the Johnny Appleseed and then you leave and let nature do the watering?
Well, for one, I did it in my company where I have a company with my brother is my main partner and my two other partners are guys I went to high school with. So talk about a difficult working environment of strong personalities.
Yeah.
And we reached a point of breakdown where I actually didn't talk to one of our partners for a year.
Oh, really? Uh-huh.
That since my brother and I were doing all the day-to-day operations of the business, it was just easier and less friction for us just not to speak. And there's not a lot of workability there, but we made it work.
Mm-hmm.
We were actually at the point where things got so divisive with the different triangulations between the strong personalities that we were going to have a conversation about, do we dissolve the company?
Mm-hmm.
And before I did that, I just said the Ho'oponopono prayer to myself over and over and got myself unhooked.
Mm-hmm.
So that I really loved these people. And you're wrong. I'm right. You've wronged me so much. With every ounce of my fiber. That just dissolved so that I didn't even really know what I was upset about anymore. And it created the space for us to have a meeting where we created an entire new business model and a way for us all to move forward on the same page. And it transformed the way that we did business. And we reestablished the relationship. And even when we do speak to each other, so the periods where we don't speak to each other, and these are pretty, they're like guys.
Yeah.
And we start and end every conversation with these guys in our company with, I love you. And sometimes these conversations are like 10 or 15 seconds long because we're doing a trade. Okay, I need to lock in, blah, 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 blah. I love you. And it's become just part of the culture.
Okay, so I just realized something because I'm watching you speak,
mm-hmm,
which unfortunately our listeners don't get to do, but you can kind of pick it up. There's something about this ritual that forces you not to take yourself so seriously.
Well, there's no I anymore.
That's worth a lot.
Yes.
But you're smiling, you're laughing. You're even smiling at the very thought of being so
hooked,
yes,
engaged.
Yes.
Yeah.
But how unnecessary that is.
It's totally and completely unnecessary. And where we spoke on at the beginning of November, and 5 days after we spoke, were the bombings in Paris and the bombings,
yes,
in Beirut.
Yes, yes.
And that was a shockwave in the collective unconscious that we all felt. So all 7 billion of us, whether we were watching the news or even heard the news, we're all at the effect of that. And there was a lot for me to think about. Mm-hmm. And, well, how does I love you fit in this? And I realized that I love you is really perhaps the only way forward out of those kind of situations. And people were really worked up, and they were so enraged that we had been attacked, that this hatred and this horror had been delivered on people. And how could somebody do something so wrong? And I wrote about it and said that I am the bomber, and I am the victim. I am the oppressor, and I am the oppressed. I am all of it. And as hooked as I am, even in situations like that, where we must strike back, we have to punish evil, I am those people, and they are me. And
so you're functioning from a we are one,
yes,
quite literally.
Right,
point of
exactly.
View.
And what activates that is I love you.
Now,
it's
really that
simple.
I have written down here, and I don't even know what I'm talking about, but it was on the little page where I was writing down things. You were saying interstellar moment.
Oh, yes.
What is that?
The interstellar moment is why I love you is really a rallying cry for me. So we're at a key inflection point in humanity, whether or not we continue or whether...
An inflection point is what?
Well, we're about to hit 9 to 10 billion people by 2050. And the inflection point is not having enough resources to be able to actually support and sustain life here.
We can't do this. Oh, that's right.
Right.
Leaving planet Earth.
Right. So the interstellar moment is a great cli-fi film where we've destroyed the ability for us to be sustained on this planet, mm-hmm. and we have to leave and find a new home.
Yes.
And through the miracles of Hollywood, we have our interstellar moment, and lo and behold, we find a new home and can populate another planet. So that's rosy, even though it's very dark, and we're starting from
We're so far away from terraforming Mars, are we?
Well, that again, I think, is wishful thinking.
Oh.
In Elon Musk's world, it's absolute. But I also think that there's a kind of jaded cynicism around that as well, because it's like, well, yeah, we're going to cut bait on planet Earth because it's untenable. And we know the way that this bus is going, so we better colonize mm-hmm. another planet mm-hmm. now because there's nowhere for us to go. Which is why I think that I love you and being able to be responsible for all of it. It means that we're responsible for our corporations, and our corporations are responsible for us. One of my great mentors on this is Yvon Chouinard, who is the founder of Patagonia. So he wrote a memoir called Let My People Go Surfing. And it's about his adventures as a reluctant entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was just into climbing and surfing, and that was his whole life. And he made pitons that were superior, and that was his business. And he had a mimeograph sheet, and he sent those out to the world so that he could do that for 6 months and climb and surf for 6 months. And he just got more and more successful, and his company grew and grew. And as it did, he realized what a huge impact that he was having on the planet, and had to go through all kinds of discovering new production methods mm-hmm. and take responsibility for how his goods were manufactured around the world. But what I love about him is that he's so pragmatic. He's just he says that if corporations don't get it together and take responsibility for responsible stewardship of our planet, then people die off and we don't have customers anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
So you can't stay in business if your customer base dies. And to me, that's why being able to activate unity and extend it out to this only place that we call home is so critically important.
Oh, so that's what you were talking about, how pragmatic it is in the business world.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter is about to turn 4. And I realize that we don't have 10 years to get this right. We don't have 30 years to get this right.
I agree with you.
Yeah, that if we don't do it now,
right.
I'm assuring her interstellar future mm-hmm. if she's lucky enough to get it.
Yes.
So that's what I meant about it. So it takes it, out of the realm of warm and fuzzy and can't we all just get along and wouldn't that be great to we need to sort this out now or we're cooked. And, you know, the bottom line is that our planet doesn't care either.
Oh, I know. We talked about that last time afterwards because every time I hear people say we have to save the planet, I want to give somebody a smack.
Right.
The planet will be so happy with us gone.
Yeah.
It'll be like hitting the refresh button.
Yeah.
I think Chernobyl is just a paradise right now. Isn't it doing well and things have grown back? Have you read about it?
Yes. It's unlivable for humans and most mammals, but for in terms of flora and fauna,
yes. Some fauna is doing fine.
Right.
Yes, because we're not there anymore.
Exactly.
Oh, it's pathetic.
Well,
we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Well, if we all just love each other and get that we are all of it, including our planet, then there is some hope for us. But the dinosaurs ruled the planet for over 100 million years.
Right.
They were gone in the bat of an eye. In 75 years. We've been the dominant species for 10,000. That's not even a tick mark, a pimple on the timeline of history. And when we're gone, we will not be missed. The next adaptive species will come along and they'll be the dominant force. So, our planet doesn't care, but we should care about our planet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you want to read something because I can see it right there. What is it you brought?
Oh, then there was just a couple of things that came out of what I was talking about after the Paris bombing and taking responsibility for all of it.
By the way, taking responsibility is always such a good thing to talk about because people don't think of it too often, and I think even if they do, they don't know how. So
well,
go ahead.
We end up being hooked and being at the effect of something,
which
is why with the Ho'oponopono prayer, for instance, is that I become unhooked. It means that nobody can do anything to me. And that I'm responsible for all of it. It doesn't mean that anybody can do anything to me, but it means that I have the power.
Okay, so what is it you were going to...
Well, there were a couple of quotes that I wrote about, and it was, I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. Martin Luther King Jr. In my life, I had to choose between love and hate. I chose love, and I am here today. That was A.R. Rahman, who was the music composer for Slumdog Millionaire, his Oscar acceptance speech. I had to choose between love and hate. I chose love, and I'm here today.
So again,
powerful.
The practical of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And be soft. Do not let the world make you hard. Do not let pain make you hate. Do not let the bitterness steal your sweetness. Take pride that even though the rest of the world may disagree, you still believe it to be a beautiful place. And that's Kurt Vonnegut. So no matter how ugly or depressing or hard or cynical and resigned that we can become, there's always I love you. And I love you can pull you right out of that moment and spark that connection with the human being who happens to be standing right in front of you.
And you're also touching on when you're talking about cynical and hardened, there's also something else that you haven't talked about that I'd like to ask you about.
Sure.
Which is the real disaster, I think, between people and life is hopelessness.
Yes. Hopelessness.
That's worse than cynicism. I think that's when you have no hope.
Right. So
you don't what?
You think that there's no love and you think that you're completely separate and cut off. And again, that's the very, very basis of all of this work that I do is that anything that says that we're an individual and that we're separate from the whole, that's the illusion. It's it's the glue of the human experience. So when we choose to have an individual experience, when we choose to have a skin suit and our spark of spirit comes and inhabits this body, that it's for the purpose of having an individual experience, but with the implicit knowledge that we are never separate from the whole, that we are unity. But I talked about this narcissistic disorder where we just forget that. We've forgotten in the joy of having this skin suit and this individual experience that we are cut off from the whole. And that could be God or spirit or spirituality or unity or all of it, whatever we call it. But to me, it's inescapable. It is our essence. And we just forget that. Now so, I just wanted to add that Dr. David Hawkins, he did 40 years of research. His main books are called Power Versus Force and The Eye of the Eye. And he calibrated the levels of energy and emotion and truth using applied kinesiology.
Now, what does that mean? And how did he do it?
Just simple muscle testing, applied kinesiology, like you would use at the chiropractor mm-hmm. or naturopath or whatever, where you hold your arm up and they hit different points on your body and you get a quick yes or no response.
Uh-huh.
Either you're weak or you're strong, yes or no. So he did hundreds of thousands of these tests and was able to calibrate the levels of energy. And he calibrated everything on a scale from 0 to 1,000. And love is 500, which is pretty far up the scale because enlightenment is 700 to 1,000.
Okay.
But he said that 87% of the people on the planet are 200 and below.
Wow.
And so
I thought you were going to say so the opposite.
Right. And those emotions that you were talking about are shame, guilt, apathy, grief, fear, desire, anger, pride. And that anger is great because it's actually the crowbar that is the bridge and can pull you out of these lower calibrating levels of emotion and into the higher ones.
Anger does that? How does anger do that?
Because you're so fed up and you're so angry that something's got to change. And you can either go back down into despair and shame and guilt and apathy and grief, or you can go up into neutrality going, I'm neutral, or willingness or acceptance or reason or love, and go up the scale.
1,000 is a very fine-tuned scale.
His research was exhaustive and a total numbers geek.
Okay.
And he applied this to companies, organizations, religious works.
What's his goal? Why?
To find the truth where he can look at anything in life and say truth or no truth. And so we talked about this a little bit the last time, is that I've never, ever been a believer in the truth.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a million different truths.
Mm-hmm.
But after getting into this work, I realized that the truth is I love you, and that the truth is love, and that's the only truth. So I had a little change of thinking about that there's a million shades of gray and there's only one truth, which is I love you.
Thank you for doing this and thank you for coming back. And I have a question.
You.
So you referred last time and this time to your 4-year-old daughter.
Yes.
And she's being raised with this as
it's
the
candy,
everyday.
Every day, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And do you ever write love letters to her?
I've written, yes, usually on when she was born and on birthdays, and we had something for school where we just did, like, you have the emergency file at school in case anything happens to the parents. So on occasions I will write her love letters.
What does this have to do with the emergency file?
Because if we're not here anymore, if the parents make an exit, we have a letter that we leave behind.
Oh, yes, I'm going to cry. Okay, I thought you meant like if something happened and she had an emergency, where they would.
Uh-huh. No, it's like if we're no longer, if our human experience ends and we leave a love letter behind.
So that's really what I was going to get to.
Yeah.
Because when parents are no longer here,
mm-hmm.
and obviously according to, you know, life's best plan, we go first.
Yes.
Then they have those letters. And my own experience has been from just what I've seen and what people report and say, those letters, the handwriting, it evokes you like nothing else does, and it brings you back.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
yes.
So it's important for children to have those.
Well, I had a too advanced conversation with her the other day, but she was talking about her grandchildren.
Uh-huh.
And by names, and she's talking all about them. And I just said, look, you're probably not going to get this, but time is an illusion. So actually your grandkids are here.
Oh, right. They
and
just, yes.
Yeah, they just, they're not like in the moment, but
they're
here. That's
got to be much too sophisticated for.
Absolutely. But
yes,
if she starts hearing it now, but that I love you expressed in those love letters, even though the people aren't here anymore,
mm-hmm.
they're totally here. You can't pick up the phone and call them.
Right. On either end.
On either end.
Right.
But that letter, of course, it's just, it is now, it is immediate, it's here, it's just as if you're
it also
looking
evokes
at them.
More than just itself.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I hope when you have more to report and more to say, you'll come back again. I just love listening to you.
Oh, I love
you
the
make
conversation.
A lot of sense.
Thank
may I just
you.
Say oddly enough.
Yes.
Okay.
I
thank
love you,
you
Jenny.
Dear. I love you, Joshua. Oh, really quickly.
Yes.
So the other night, this I was telling a woman about this, and she, as I left, she said, and she was just all behind it. She said, "I'm going to do this." And as I left, I offered, you know, her my hand to say goodbye, and she said, "I love you."
Yes.
And I started to laugh, and I said, "Oh, it's for hello, not for goodbye." And we laughed about that.
Right.
And when I told you, you said, "No, no,
yeah,
because
it's for goodbye, hello, goodbye,
goodbye is a different thing because you already know the person."
Right. But what
so
better,
maybe you really do feel a different kind of love by the time you leave.
What better delightful piece of candy and sweetness to leave somebody with?
So you're
go
saying
your
at
day.
Any point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And
yeah.
even acknowledging that it can mean different things at different points, because you started out last time saying it means nothing and it means everything.
Right.
I'm going to leave us all with that thought.
Great.
Thank you, dear. This is Janet Gallen. Until next time. Saying goodbye, and remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, there is always a special occasion, and apparently I've just learned a new one, to the grandchildren that you don't yet know you have. And people have done that, by the way.
Yes.
To unborn children and grandchildren. Stick it in the emergency file.
Yes.
Thank you. My head is again spinning. Okay, goodbye.